You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of August 1st, 2017, and episode number 324. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. My goodness, it's August already? Good grief. Where did the summer go? Well, I can tell you where the summer went up in Chicago. And if you listened to the network last night, WCJV Radio, you heard a lot of talk about the Chicago Phantom. Well, there's even more to talk about, and we're going to tackle some of that tonight. And we're going to talk about the MUFON sighting statistics for July. We're also going to talk about Rob Lowe again. He talked to a ghost, so we'll find out a little bit about that. And we'll talk about, if I have time, talk about this woman who decided to marry her reincarnated husband. Weird. Or that story could be called Don't Have a Cow, Man. We'll also have the book of the week and a little bit of mischief in between. Well, this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is the study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics to quantum physics to cosmology to psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. And for further information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And lots of notes here. Yes, started talking about the Chicago Phantom right here at the top of the show. And again, if you listened to the Crypto Kid radio show last night with host Colin Schneider, he talked to Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters, who is pretty much leading the way in the research with this Chicago Phantom. He's the one that actually came up with that name, Chicago Phantom. A lot of other names have been thrown around. Batman, Owlman. Sorry, Batman. You know, just different terms that have been tossed around, this bipedal bat, Owlman, and all sorts of weird things. And again, a lot of people comparing this to Mothman. But I think Chicago Phantom sticks. I think it's pretty good. There's a variant of descriptions, and if you listen to that show last night, you got a really good sense of kind of the strangeness factor, and he kind of put it all into 1 hour's worth. Whereas if you've been listening to my show over the course of the last few weeks, I've just been getting the snippets here and there and just kind of breaking down these sightings. And it was also announced last night that Lon Strickler, his radio show hosts, partners Sean Forker, the Fork Chop, and Butch Witkowski, hosts of Arcane Radio, will be joining the WCJV family. Very excited about this. Really looking forward to some really good talent coming to this network, even more really good talent to add to what we already have. And I'll tell you what, just Lon alone and Phantoms and Monsters backing this network is going to really, really help us out. And it's going to make your week really easy to listen to and understand what's going on here in the paranormal between Colin, myself, Arcane Radio, and of course, Cat Hobson, we're going to be bringing you top-notch information with the paranormal and the most important people and a diversity of the dynamic fields that are out here in the paranormal. So I'm really excited about this. I think this is a win-win-win for everybody involved, and I'm really excited about that. Arcane Radio coming to WCJV very soon. Let's see, what have I been doing? Well, I was a little bit busy over the weekend, a very rare occurrence that you get an event that lasts 2.5 days. But the Kecksburg UFO Festival started on Friday afternoon. I was off all day, got ready to go, and my wife and I drove out to Kecksburg, stopped at the hotel on the way out, and showed up, about a little after 5, quarter after 5, got the table set up. The event kicked off at 6 p.m., and I'll tell you what, it filled up. There was more people probably I could count in an hour's time than a lot of these events have in an entire 8-hour period. And that's nothing negative or nothing against some of these paranormal conferences. It's just that this Kecksburg UFO Festival just attracts so many people from all over the place. And this is just isn't Southwest Pennsylvania here. I mean, there's people that traveled a long way. Talked to a woman who traveled all the way from New Orleans. Granted, she was on her way home to West Virginia, but she traveled from New Orleans and stopped directly there before going home to check out the conference. So really cool. Also talked to some people from Wisconsin, got an email. They drove 1,300 miles. So it was a great email I received. It was one of those feel-good moments where they said that that I helped make their journey very worthwhile. And that really means a lot to me that people would take the time to let you know that you made a positive impact on their experience at a, you know, it's weird. It's a weird thing. UFO festival. It's a kind of a street fair, it's a celebration of the city. The Kecksburg EMS, the Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Department really pitch in and really do a fantastic job. And they're in charge of pretty much everything. I mean, from parking, they sell T-shirts, they're selling refreshments. They're putting on all these events, such as the bed race, which is really weird. The burnout contest, fireworks, you name it. They were in the middle of everything. There was bands playing on the back of a trailer. Right out in the middle of everything. It was just so much going on. And so many people. It was so crowded, but it was fantastic. The weather was perfect. And Friday night, we were there till, 10 o'clock, and we left. A little tired, a little worn out. It was just the beginning of everything. Saturday was, Saturday was a long day. We were there pretty late. Got there around 11 o'clock a.m. and were there all day long, just kind of manning the table, chit-chatting with my neighbors, Colin Schneider, you know him, Ron Murphy, Stan Gordon, and just a lot of other people that were there. I mean, I can't remember everybody that was there, but Colin Schneider, he was two tables down. Ron Murphy was right next to me, the crypto guru and writer extraordinaire. The folklorist, extremists, Stan Gordon, who is pretty much the backbone of, anomalous research in Pennsylvania, I would have to say. I mean, he is the guy, the go-to guy for just about everybody, including myself. I mean, I've learned a lot of stuff from Stan. He's very influential in a lot of people's journey through and into the paranormal. Let's see, the West Virginia and Pennsylvania MUFON State Director, Fred Saluga, was there, as was John Ventry. Kind of my neighbors down a little ways, well, two tables, I guess, Jimmy and D Trick of Goosebumps Paranormal. If you ever want a high-quality walking stick, you have to find Jimmy and Dietrich of Goosebumps Paranormal. I won a stick a couple of years ago. It's got little Bigfoot engraved in it and everything. It's fantastic. Got a little flashlight on there with the red lens over it, so I can see in the dark. I know that's weird, because I don't like ruining my night vision. I usually don't use lights, flashlights at all when I'm in outside at night. But this, it's just a fantastic walking stick, and it's very, very trustworthy. And they have millions of designs. They do a fantastic job with that. Not just that, but they're great people as well. Great neighbors, and they're into everything. The ghost stuff and cryptid stuff and all that stuff. So Dave Dragason, well, he was a little late. He wasn't feeling very good on Friday, and he sat out Saturday, but he showed up on Sunday a little under the weather. But he looked good. He sounded a little bit more healthy, and it was good to see Dave again. I actually talked to him on the phone earlier today about some potential upcoming stuff that I can't talk about yet. Ricky Cherby, my buddy. My brother from another mother, as they all say. He popped in on Saturday sporting his Pennsylvania Cryptozoology Society t-shirt, which I was also wearing. It was kind of cool. We're like brothers. It was neat to see Ricky. He's a great guy, a great researcher himself. Gosh, so many people that just stopped by to ask questions about ghosts, UFOs, and cryptids. I mean, I got everything on my table. So people kind of point in my direction. So they can't answer a question, they point a person in my direction. But, you know, I love that. And having that time, being there for Friday night for a few hours and Saturday being there for like 10 hours. Granted, Sunday you only have a couple hours until the speaker event starts. But it just seems like you have a lot of time to relax and really talk with people and get information from them. I took a whole, oh gosh, two or three pages full of notes just talking with people and some ideas that Ron Murphy and I were shooting around and different ideas from Colin and just different people I talked to that weekend. You know, resources, books, or events that are going on, just different things. So it's great to network. If you don't go to these things, I'm telling you, you're missing out. It's not about who's speaking or who's appearing. It's just who's there. And, you know, you might not care for the TV folks, and that's fine. Maybe you love the TV folks, but that's fine as well. But getting to these events will give you an opportunity to meet very like-minded people and will allow you to expand your knowledge and learn from others and their experiences. This message brought to you by Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, anyway, it is a lot of fun. I mean, some people complain about this stuff. You know, it's self-serving. There's a lot of egos. Yeah, some of these events are like that. But I'm telling you what, the Kecksburg UFO Festival, everybody got along. We were all having fun. Was goofing off and just it was a great time. I mean, when you can relax, you don't have to worry about anything. Everybody, like I said, we all got along. It was fantastic. And I'm telling you what a lineup of speakers. Between you starting it off with Stan Gordon, the man of Pennsylvania. He's done it all. 58 years of research and investigations with UFOs, Bigfoot, and Bigfoot and UFOs combined. Not so much the ghost stuff, but you know, he filters it down to other people, but he's the researcher. Then you jump into myself. I talked about UFOs. Then Colin comes in and talks about cryptids. And Ron Murphy comes in and closes the show, brings down the house, talking about all the crazy things happening up on Chestnut Ridge, which is very close by. Just really, it was a great group of speakers. And just the topics that we chose just kind of rolled off and everything just kind of worked together. It was fantastic. But there was a little bit of rain Friday night, a little Saturday morning. I know we drove in through some really heavy rain, but it was real quick and brief. And I got worried. I got there and I said, man, every time I come to Pennsylvania, it like pours. It's like, I don't understand it. But Saturday turned out to be a beautiful day. And Sunday, my goodness, Sunday was like perfect. A little warm, but it was still perfect. We got a little hot when we were speaking. But other than that, I mean, my goodness, you couldn't ask for any better event weather for that weekend. And again, I really want to thank everybody who came by my table to talk about anything, you know, whether it was, hey, I got a problem. Hey, I've got this picture. Hey, I've got this story. it's always good that people, you know, trust you or want to share personal information or just thank you for anything that you do. And one thing I got to remember here, I want to, you know, Dita, you think you're my biggest fan. You're not. I met a guy named Elton. He is my biggest fan. And he bought a bunch of my books. Like, I think he bought everything I had. Got a selfie with me, and he kind of making me feel like a celebrity. I was picking on Ron because we always talk about, you know, all these celebs that the Paris celebs and everything that we always want to jokingly want to be like that. We don't really care about that. So I was telling Ron that, you know, hey, this guy says I'm a minor local celebrity, but it was a great experience to meet somebody who's really digs this show. And, you know, Elton tells me that I'm doing a good job, that he enjoys the way that I put these stories together, and I'm very balanced, which is exactly what I want to hear, because that's my goal, to try to keep everything centered and not, you know, not one. It's like I was telling a lot of people over the weekend, it's so easy to just believe. It's so easy to just say, yes, all this stuff exists. It's real. Every story I read on Facebook is 100%. It's easy to do that. A lot of people do that. I don't want to say do. They do that. And on the other end, it's easy to be a skeptic. It's easy to just dismiss everything. It's easy to say, well, that's a load of this and that's a load of that, and that's not true and that's not real. It's easy to do those extremes. We all see that in posts on Facebook or pictures or this or that, or even on radio shows. People are usually take one side or the other. But my goal here is just to present you the information and let you, the listener, decide. I'm not going to tell you what to think. I'm going to tell you what I think, but don't take my word for it. So that's my little summary of the Kecksburg UFO Festival. Great time. Again, thank you, everyone, that I got to meet and to see and to see again. I don't get to see these people all the time. And it was like kind of like meeting family. It was a great time. And my presentation, again, I just mentioned this, at Kecksburg, centered on my new book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator. And this book now, I just checked this morning, and I didn't expect it. It's now available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and probably a few other places. I still prefer that if you are going to pick up this book, two best ways to do this. For convenience for you and myself, going through the Lulu site, which can be reached through paranewsinsider.com. On the front page, you'll see the first paragraph. It says, gives a little brief bio, and it says that I have 6 books. Click on that. I'll take you right to the homepage. Granted, probably the best way is to find where I'm at, where I'm speaking. And I give a pretty hearty discount at conventions compared to what you'll get it online. Yeah, it's worth your time to come meet me in public if you're going to buy, if you really desire to want to buy one of my books. Plus, you can have it signed, which is double awesome. And, well, I think I had those links. Yeah, I got those links. I'm going to throw these links in the chat room in case you guys are wondering if that's for real. Yes, it's for real. I am. Plenty of books on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. All sorts of stuff. So anyway, that is that. And one quick thing that I want to mention, don't forget, if you're listening to the show live and you're not in the chat room, shame on you. Well, not really shame on you. I get it. You got things to do. But remember, we also have an app. Yes, there is an app for that. It's available for any iOS device. That's your iPhone, iPad, as well as Android devices. You can listen live and chat. It's awesome. So no excuses not to listen to this show. So go to the App Store or Google Play Store and type in WCJV and download now. WCJV is also on iHeartRadio as well as iTunes. I know my show is already on those as well, but getting the network out there is also important. And it makes it easier for you guys to listen to this great lineup of shows. Let's see. Well, I'm not going to talk about that. That's gone. I've listed the events listing is up to date now that I'm looking at it. Had to fix that this afternoon. The next thing I have going on is the Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event this weekend, August 5th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And I decided to not talk about what I was going to talk about. No, Dita, you have been replaced. You are not the number one fan. I know you're here every night, but you got to meet Elton. He is my biggest fan. I appreciate him for his kind comments. Let's see. The Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event. I'm not going to talk about what I was going to talk about. They kind of let us, I guess, talk about what we want. I'm going to change it up a bit. I'm going to talk about Black Panthers. I was going to talk about the basics of cryptozoology, but you know what? I want a little something different. I enjoyed talking about UFOs this past weekend, but I want to talk about something specific. And I don't know. I heard a lot about Black Panthers this weekend, black cats and cat sightings. And every time I go to Pennsylvania, I get excited about that. So put together something last night while I was listening to Crypto Kid radio show and whipped it up. So it's hopefully going to be really, I think it's really interesting. It's really cool. It's really good. And you got to check it out this Saturday. It's all day. I mean, 9:30 in the morning, Stan Gordon's going to kick it off. You're going to have John Ventry is going to be on after Stan. Douglas Yonker, who's putting on this event, will also be talking after that. There's a little lunch break between 12:30 and 1 p.m. Then they're going to be talking about strange weather and UFOs. Photographing the Night Sky with Ron Shawley, AccuWeather Storm Chaser. That'll be interesting. I love the weather stuff. I think that's really cool to view. Then I'll be up from 2 to 3 p.m. You better be there. Ed Kellerman. He's got some books out there. He was there at the Kecksburg UFO Festival. Then Colin Schneider from 5 to 6 p.m. will be speaking. Al Brinza, an Allegheny Mountain ghost hunter. And from 7 to 8 p.m., Phil Liptick. So 8 p.m., that's a long day. I'm going to be grouchy. I'll be hangry. But they get food and drinks from 11 to 6 p.m. But it's going to be an interesting event. It's not your typical paranormal convention. It's just a wide array of speakers, a wide array of topics. And the Black Panther is going to be a little controversial, but it's going to be fun. I don't care. It'll be noteworthy. That's what I'm going to say. So let's get in. My goodness, the show's almost over already. I haven't even gotten to the news yet. So let's jump into cryptid news. And again, this is going to kind of piggyback on what you heard last night if you were listening to the Crypto Kid radio show. The Chicago Phantom, flying humanoid, bat owl-like creature, whatever you want to call him. Yeah, he's back. Big time. Report was turned into Lon Strickler back on July 26th. About a second witness to the June 29th incident where a police officer was purportedly flagged down and a police report was purportedly submitted by the officer from the witness statements. Well, the witness was walking with friends after visiting a Wendy's restaurant when someone noticed a large dark object in a tree. Suddenly, the object flew out of the tree and landed on the roof of an apartment building. The witness was only able to notice what the creature looked like as it flew, and simply described it as a, quote, tall, dark thing with wide wings, unquote. Okay. And she said that details were hard to make out at night. And that's your first story there. And let me throw that in the chat room. I don't hurt anybody. Boom. And another story, second one. This is I would say one of the more confusing parts of this whole ongoing story is the fact that despite the number of sightings and purported fear behind these sightings, there doesn't seem to be much interest by the local media. And it's really confusing, and I've been searching high and low through different Chicago, a variety of different newspapers. There's a lot out there. But the big one is the Chicago Tribune. Really didn't expect to see anything from these guys, but all of that changed Saturday, July 29th. I was at the Kecksburg UFO Festival. We had, well, I had Wi-Fi, but it kind of went in and out. There was no signal inside that little hall. So it was between talking to people and getting outside. And when the Wi-Fi worked, I was kind of trying to keep up on all this stuff that was going on. And I'll tell you, when thinking about potentially what's going to happen if and when a news report comes out, I really think it's usually going to come down to two potential outcomes with this story. I figured the first report in a major newspaper would either be of overblown fear, something similar to the War of the Worlds radio show, where people just flipped out, where the media made a bigger deal about it than what people were really reacting to it. Or the story would be of complete and utter denial. And it's not hard to imagine, based on the headline, where this particular journalist, Ted Slowick, decided to go. I kind of said his name with a little anger there, I think. Ted Slowick. Well, he decided to name this. Well, it was in the Daily Southtown section, and the article is titled, quote, "Chicago's Mothman Stories Are a Good Paranormal Entertainment," unquote. Ouch. The article opens up poking a bit of fun at ghosts, UFOs, and Bigfoot stories in the area, and then talks about how the author viewed the stories of a Mothman in Chicago with a, quote, "healthy dose of skepticism," unquote. Well, as if anything else is like a sickness. Well, the article mentions Lon Strickler's work on these sightings, as well as his thoughts, and briefly describes the sightings, and then mentions the June 29th incident purportedly involving a police officer in Chicago. Well, the Tribune apparently contacted the police department, where a spokesperson commented on the claim that a police report about the incident was filed by stating, quote, "Our database did not reveal any reports or any incidents regarding the aforementioned," unquote. Well, if this is true, and they actually did the work and actually made the phone call and actually did that work, as he says he did, this finding kind of puts a little bit of a dampener on that particular sighting, as well as the one I mentioned before this story. Granted, some may say this is a cover-up. I don't know why, but I've been hearing this. Since the police don't want panic from the public, and this article may also be part of a tactic to subdue the overall fear. I'm not sure about that, but I think realistically speaking, this might signal that this might be, and I'm just saying might be an elaborate prank that grew a little too large, and now the cracks are finally splitting the story apart. But we're going to have to, we just can't ignore it. We just got to see what's going to happen here. And will the attention on the story create more valid witnesses to step forward? That's the question here. And that's kind of the hopeful thing here. But on the flip side, will this open the floodgates for people to spread misinformation about a giant bat that doesn't exist? I mean, I've had my doubts about the story since day one. You have to be open-minded and you have to think both ways. For the, you know, potential maybe for misidentification of large birds, maybe even bats, as well as the, you know, who knows, the biological impossibility of such a large creature existing, whether a bat or a person mixed with an owl. I mean, it's just biologically not possible. And, you know, we discussed a person in a wingsuit, but all that went out the window as well, pretty much early on. So I don't know. I mean, this article could go one of two ways, and I don't think it's really going to be completely negative. You know, any news is good news. Any attention is usually good attention for stuff, but we'll keep an eye out there and see what happens. Well, you're about to find out that it might be a good thing here. So before we hit that, I want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insight with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And again, in case you missed it, Monday nights, the Crypto Kid radio show hosted by Colin Schneider. Don't miss it. His guest was Lon Strickler last night. You can get the archive in a lot of different places. You just got to look for it. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night, You can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson as she talks with Chad Morin, who is the co-owner of Ghost Hunt Weekends. That's Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson tomorrow night, Wednesday night. And that's going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, Wednesday night. Again, right here on WCJVRadio.com. I think that time's right. I don't know. Where was I? Well, we were in Chicago. Watch your wallet. We were in Chicago talking about the, you know, all this stuff coming up. The, yeah, I guess that's right. 8 p.m. Good. Chicago Phantom. And this is just another story. This is the third story. Later on that night, July 29th, another report came into the desk of Lon Strickler via Manuel Navarrete. Navarrete? Of UFO Clearinghouse, who has also been receiving these reports in addition to MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And on a side comment real quick on MUFON's involvement, from someone whom I spoke to over the weekend about this incident, I've learned that MUFON is not investigating this case due to the fact that it does not involve UFO sightings. But if there had, in fact, been UFO sightings involved with the Chicago Phantom sightings, then MUFON would be there. And you don't want MUFON picking around your stuff, because there's a lot of people that have privy to that information to investigate it. So the report on July 29th states that the witness and a friend observed a huge black shape gliding over the area while in the Albany Park, Lincoln Square area, which is north of the main area of Chicago. They were observing from a balcony and estimated to be about a half a mile from the flying object. I guess it was gliding. I don't know if it was flying or gliding. It's two different things. The witness saw the object gliding for about 2 minutes over the area before they say it was lost in the clouds and headed south. The only description they had was it appeared to be a 8-foot wingspan. And I can't help it. I'm a researcher. It's what I do. Just an observation, but according to Weather Underground, on July 29th, clouds were described as scattered in the morning and then as partly cloudy for most of the day, but these clouds moved out of the area in the early evening, and it was clear with a visibility of 10 miles all day long. So I don't know how they got lost in the clouds. Not sure about that, but well, I don't know. Just kind of throwing it out there. And that is, that's another story. Copy that linky dinky and put it in the chat room. And then we'll get right back here real quick and do the another story. And of course, gotta welcome Jim Mallard to the chat room there. Greetings, Jim. Of the Mallard Report, TMR247.com, and you can listen well after the show's done. Then he'll be going on pretty soon, well, an hour after that. And always great to see Walt there in the chat room as well. Let's move on to the third story of the week on the Chicago Phantom. And I tell you, Colin talked about this, well, I guess Lon talked about this, and Colin listened and asked questions last night. And I'll tell you what, I agree, this is probably the strangest, by far the strangest of all the reports so far. This one was discovered on a website called True Strange Library, which has an article about the Mothman and discusses the early Chicago sightings, and was published on April 29th of this year. Now, a comment appeared at the end of the article on May 31st, where the person posting, who's nicknamed JJ, stated that John, the husband of the witness, stated that he saw a person with long legs running across the highway when suddenly it turned into a large blackbird and flew away. The incident occurred on February 8th at about 1 a.m. local time. The witness has said to have been a skeptic and was very confused about this particular sighting. This is the latest and now 26th report to appear on the map created by Von Strickler. Let's see, what is this? Well, I guess that's the same story. Just got a push from Facebook. I saw Lon's face pop up when I'm talking about Lon. That's spooky. Anyway, let me post the link of that third one in here. There it is. And we've got a fourth story. My goodness, we're not done yet. A fourth story this week on the Chicago Phantom is a report that is hot off the presses. A report was turned into Manuel Navarrete at UFO Clearinghouse, and Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters has organized the story with some maps and photographs. And I'm going to share you my own photographs that I've kind of dug up about this. This one's, well, not this one, the next one. Well, getting ahead of myself here. Well, the story goes back to July 20th at about 5 p.m. A woman, her best friend, sister, and her boyfriend were in a car driving along North Lakeshore Drive when the driver's boyfriend, who was in the front, saw a large black object fly from underneath a bridge and out toward the lake. They described it as a giant black bat and could not continue to watch it as, well, they were driving. One thing I did notice is that the bridges are pretty close to the ground. Not as much area that I thought it would be for, you know, this large creature to come flying out from. I'm surprised it didn't hit a car because there's really not that much clearance above this. And this happened at 5 p.m. on a Thursday at night. So there would have to be a lot of traffic. I mean, a lot of other people should have seen this, and this probably could have caused an accident here. Another thing I noticed in one of the photographs that was provided on the article is that there's a big traffic camera hanging down from the bridge. It's underneath one of the bridges. So, I mean, granted, while it's more than likely pointed at the traffic below, it might hold a glimpse of this creature if this event really happened. But, you know, who knows? It might not have been able to capture it from the angle because if this thing flew out above, then, yeah, you're going to have that. So, boom. Wow. So I'm doing this show and I'm talking about the paranormal news, and in the chat room, they're talking about playing cards and drinking coffee. Well, I guess I'm not that entertaining. And now they're drawing mustaches on my picture. Well, that's great. Well, as crazy as this sounds, there is yet another report that was released just today on the Chicago Phantom. This is another one that was turned into Manuel Navarrete at UFO Clearinghouse and appears on phantomsandmonsters.com. And this report is from Thursday, July 27th at around 8:45 p.m. Central Time. Any times that I give about these stories is local time, by the way. The witness stated that they were walking alone to a bus station after work and noticed a large bat-like creature perched on top of a light pole across the street from the Harold Washington Library. The witness said the creature was about 7 feet tall and was just sitting there. It was just sitting there, creepy. And let me, before I get too carried away, I'm going to throw some photogs in the chat room real quick. And these are two pictures that I screen capped off of Google Earth. You need to go down to the street level. And I don't know what street actually this took place on. There's really three streets surrounding this. The other is a kind of a subway goes, or not a subway, I guess it's above ground train thingy, majiggy. You know Chicago, how they have those above ground things. It goes over it. But it's pretty cool. So you see these two pictures, you can see some of the light fixtures. They're different on each street. So I'm not sure which one it was sitting on. But again, there's a lot of traffic there, and that's weird. But the witness described what happened next, and this is directly from the witness. Quote, "This creature had a pair of glowing red eyes that appeared to be fixated on something across the street. It stood there for about 6 seconds. That's when I saw a flash from a group of kids on the sidewalk as someone was taking a picture of this thing. It then spread open a large pair of wings, flapped them a couple of times, and took off into the air. The girls from that group of kids screaming, and they all took off running. I saw it as it shot up and over the library and was gone in the matter of about 2 seconds, unquote. And again, this is a very busy area. Even with the majority of the workforce out of the area, the library itself is open until 9 p.m. and serves as the main hub for the Chicago Public Library and its 80 branches. I mean, this is an incredible story. I mean, just these things keep piling up. I mean, is this a shapeshifter, a large unidentified bird, a bat, modern day Mothman, or is it a series of hoaxes, wishful thinking with a side of misidentification? I don't know. I don't have the answers, but the more cases we get, the more we can kind of disseminate this information. Granted, you can't use one of these 28 cases that are in here now, 28 cases. So if you have the link to the map, that'll give you the up-to-date. Lon does a great job. He updates this map whenever he gets a case, and he just uploads that information to the ongoing map of information. Whew. That's your Phantom, Chicago Phantom update for the week. My goodness, it's just insane. And we're going to jump into UFO news with the Mutual UFO Network and their sighting statistics for July. I know it's August 1st. We already have the stats. And let me tell you, man, I was way off again, way off, not even close. Now, last month, I predicted 685 total worldwide sightings with 519 in the United States. But I was off there too. The month of June, MUFON reported 590 worldwide sightings and only 421 for the United States. So I think I was shooting too high and I lowered my expectations. I lowered my numbers, but I missed by about a mile once again. I don't know. I was doing pretty good there for a while. Now I'm not even close. For the month of July, I predicted a small increase from the June stats with 604 worldwide sightings and 436 U.S. sightings. However, MUFON reported a whopping 785 total worldwide sightings with 593 occurring in the United States. I didn't see that coming. I don't think anybody else did either. That was pretty significant. Not only is 785 the largest amount of sightings in 2017 for any single month, it is the most sightings in a single month since November of 2015. And that's when MUFON smashed their own record books all year long, pretty much starting in June. I think June was the largest month in history for the amount of UFO reports gathered by MUFON. And a lot of that was due to the popularity of the television show Hangar One. So people were coming out and talking about all their UFO sightings they've had and never told anybody over the years. So with 785 total sightings, 593 occurring in the United States, well, who is next? Canada. Of course, Canada submitted the second most number of reports with 69. The United Kingdom was next with 36. Australia was next with 12. Germany and Puerto Rico had 7 each. New Zealand and Portugal had 6 each. And India and Brazil had 5 each. Another 28 countries submitted reports with 19 of those, only submitting one. And what was weird about this was it also included North Korea, which is weird. I wonder if it was related to their missile tests. Not sure. That's as close as you're going to get me to talk about politics on this show. The reason there is such a sharp drop off from the United States to Canada to everybody else is because MUFON does not have a real strong presence in many other countries. And there are a lot of these countries have their own organizations that exist, which investigate reports. So a lot of that information goes to other resources. Now, of the 593 reports submitted from the United States, California, of course, led the way with 64 reports, and it should lead the way because it's number one in population. That just really should be how it goes. That's kind of how you should look at things to see which state kind of stuck out above the rest, not by the sheer number of reports, but looking at the per capita, which we're going to talk about here in a second. Florida was next with 36 reports. New York had 31. Texas turned in 30, Pennsylvania 29, Arizona 26, Ohio and Washington, that's Washington State, had 24 each, Michigan 23, Missouri and New Jersey had 21 reports each, Oregon had 20, Illinois and Colorado had 14 each, Virginia had 13, and Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, and Minnesota had 12 each, and Georgia and Tennessee had 10 reports each. And we had 29 more states that turned in 8 or less reports, which means all 50 states turned in a report last month, although they usually also count the District of Columbia, and so they did not turn in a report last month. So apparently, a UFO did not land on the White House lawn in the month of July. I don't know if we would have heard about it anyway. July, we're going to do the per capita. I like doing this. MUFON used to do this. I know I mention this probably every single month. They used to do this. They don't do it anymore because the stats are kind of insignificant. They're very small. But again, if you just look at the sheer number of cases per state, it doesn't really give you a clear glimpse into really who's reporting the most cases. California was number one, of course, number one in population. And so it should be number one in the amount of cases reported. They had 64 reports, and their per capita is 0.163. And essentially, you take the number of reports, you divide it by the population, which I'm using July 2014 census estimates for the United States, and for the U.S. total is 0.186. So that kind of gives me the gauge. Anything above 0.186 is a little bit more significant than obviously anything below that. And again, it's per 100,000 people. So California with a 0.163, that's pretty much like somebody's arm from their shoulder to their wrist per 100,000 people. So very insignificant, not even a whole person per 100,000 people. It's basically a percentage. That's probably why MUFON really doesn't do all this. But I like it because you can stand back and look at these numbers. The next state here, Florida number, which is number three in state population, turned in 36 reports. They had a 0.174. So that's still below average. Sorry, Florida. Got to say it. Got to call you out. But, I mean, 36 is a very hearty number of cases. Or I should say reports turned in. New York, which is the fourth largest state in population in the United States, turned in a measly 0.157 per capita with 31 sightings. Ohio, which is the seventh highest in population, turned in a 0.207 with 24 sightings. Pennsylvania, which is the sixth highest state in population, 0.227, 29 sightings. Michigan, which is number 10 in population, turned in a 0.232 with their 23 sightings. And it gets better, folks. Colorado, the 21st state in population, with their 14 sightings, they have a 0.253. So a quarter of a person per 100,000. That's basically saying one in every 400,000 people reported a UFO during the month. Washington State, which is the 13th state in population, turned in a 0.329 per capita. That's 24 sightings total for them. Missouri, 18th in population, a 0.345 with 21 sightings. Arizona, which is the 14th most populous state, turned in a 0.385 with 26 sightings. Montana is way down there, number 44 in state rank in population, 0.391. 0.391. But that, they only had a whopping four sightings. Oregon, which is 27th in population, turned in a 0.504 with 20 sightings. So essentially half a person per 100,000. So one out of every 200,000 people reported a UFO in the state of Oregon last month. Alaska, which is 48th in population, had a 0.542, but they only had four reports. New Hampshire, 42nd in population, a 0.603 with their eight reports. And Idaho, 39th in population, 0.734 per capita with 12 sightings. It's pretty impressive. And Wyoming, the 50th state. Nobody lives there. There's like 10 cows and two people. No, I'm just kidding. There's 584,000 plus people in Wyoming. Still pretty small. I mean, I have a couple cities near me that have more than that. Wyoming, 0.856 per capita. Almost one in 100,000. If they would have had one more report, it would have been six reports. That would have been one per every 100,000 people. But this month, I'm going to give the winner to the state of Idaho. You guys want it. You deserve it. 0.734 with 12 sightings. The winner last month was Nevada with a 0.352. So you guys did pretty good. I don't know. It doesn't really mean much. And again, these sighting reports essentially just were turned in that month. It doesn't necessarily mean that these events happened during that month. It could have been something that happened in 1972 in the month of February, for all we know. So it doesn't really reflect what is occurring at the time. And maybe when MUFON does get around to updating their report system, that maybe we can look at that in a different way and be able to really weigh these cases in a different way. But I think it's interesting to look at these cases and be able to look at it from a statistical analysis, a statistical point of view. And let's see, I'm kind of drawing this out because I'm trying to mentally think of what my prediction is going to be for August. Man, I've been way off. It doesn't matter. I've been way off the last, I don't know, 6 months. 674 total worldwide sightings and 593 U.S. sightings. That's my prediction for the month of August. And big thanks to Audrey Hamilton for forwarding the monthly sighting statistics from MUFON. Ghost news. I got to talk about this upcoming television show. I've already talked about this. The Low Files. I know it sounds like the X-Files. The Low Files will debut tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern on A&E. And I talked about this before in regards to the story where Rob Lowe and his sons encounter what they feel was a Bigfoot. Now another story involving the show has hit the internet. It seems that Rob Lowe was asked by a journalist during a press tour on July 29th whether he had been able to communicate with a ghost during the taping of his show. Well, his answer, yeah. That was his answer, yeah. Well, this show is shaping up to be an interesting journey of a father and his sons through many paranormal stories dotting the United States, from ghosts to cryptids to UFO stories and pretty much everything in between. It seems to be more of a bonding thing than a paranormal thing, but these backdrops to their story will certainly attract viewers such as myself. I'll be tuning in as long as I remember and I can stay up late. As for the communication with the ghost, reading the story, it says it came from an ovilus of the device. Lowe said, quote, "There's a device they use that the theory is it can translate, that the spirits can talk through this device, for lack of a better term. Don't ask me how. Don't ask me the science. I don't know," unquote. Well, Rob, let me school you a little bit here. There's no science, or I should say not much science, if anything, involved with the obelisk. And despite the throngs of people who believe this device can truly communicate with the dead, there's not really a shred of evidence to support this. Rob's son, John Owen, seems to be a little bit more open-minded about it, as Rob explains during the interview, quote, John just thinks it's randomly programmed to say words at any given time, which it could be, but how does it know to say the word, unquote. Well, the obelisk purportedly works by measuring EMF and then stating a word that corresponds with the reading with no explanation or rationalization of how a ghost or spirit could understand the index contained on the microchip within the device. Essentially, it's a random word generator with a limited vocabulary. So I always tell people, no one's ever taken me up on this. Take it to a kid's birthday party and you tell me how entertaining that would be. Now, others claim that the iPhone version works just the same. But since the iPhone lacks an EMF sensor, it's actually thought that it works on GPS and suggests words based on your location. So if you're at a cemetery or a church, you're going to get certain words popping up. Maybe you didn't know that. Maybe you did. I don't know. Just here to teach and train and educate. So the low files again tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern. Check your local listings. A&E. Check it out. It's going to be interesting. To say the least, I can't wait for it. It's a long season, and the Bigfoot one is going to cap it off. Can't wait. Book of the week. I'm going to do this real fast. I mean, I got time, but book of the week is cute. It's a kid's book. I know I just did a kid's book, but trust me, this is cool. This book is for children. I don't know the age here for it. Came out in 2009. Let me read about this real quick. It doesn't really say the ages here. It's for children. It's for kids. It's neat. It's called Ghost Quest. Yeah, it's called Ghost Quest. And let me get the link in the chat room. I'm also going to put the cover of the book in the chat room as well. Maybe. We'll see. I don't know. I don't think it's working. Anyway, Ghost Quest, Explore Our Haunted World, includes 12 slides and a ghost viewer for some supernatural fun. Yeah, actually, if you open up the book, in the front there, there's this little plastic thing here, and it's got a bunch of slides, and it's this little thing that you kind of put together, you bend and shape it, and you put these slides in there, and when you look through it, it looks 3D, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat. It's a handbook for paranormal investigators. How cool is that? How cool is that? It's what I write, handbook for paranormal investigators. But this one's more for kids. Ghost Quest is written by Don Roth. Again, it came out in 2009. I mean, it's for kids. It's for kids. Don't expect much. But there is a lot of great information in this book. It says that this book will give you a better understanding of ghosts and the people who hunt them and the equipment they use. Who knows? You might become inspired to become a ghost hunter yourself. The tweed jacket and plasma blaster are optional, though. Ha ha, ha ha. The ha 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 are added by myself. It does talk about some types of ghosts, apparitions, hauntings, crisis apparitions, residual energies, stuff like that, blahzy blahzy. Does talk about the scientific method, which is really interesting. And it says that you should search for all normal, natural, scientific explanations. It is important to remain skeptical or doubtful at this point. But that's about it. After that, it's pretty much all true believer stuff, which is fine. It does talk about some locations in it. The most haunted of houses all over the world. And it does have a couple pages here talking about equipment, no obelisk, but it does talk about the EMF. It's got a pretty decent EMF detector, pretty cheap one though, but still decent. It's a single axis, not a tri-axis. I recommend a tri-axis. Anyway, it's got an EMF detector. It's got some cameras stuff and a thermal imager. I don't think kids can afford that, but it's cool nonetheless. It does talk about EVP. It's got a parabolic microphone there, computer, laptop, blah, blah, blah. Night vision goggles. I've never used those for that, but okay. Portable motion detectors, digital thermometers. And my three favorite tools they list right here at the end. A pen, a notepad, and a flashlight. I don't know why you need if you're going to investigate in the dark, why do you even need a flashlight? If you're going to investigate in the dark, don't bring a flashlight. That's silly. It doesn't even make any sense. It does talk about some weird stuff. Dowsing rods, automatic writing. I'm not sure that really has much to do with ghost investigations. Some people like it. Some people do it. I don't know. This book, it's cool too. And at the end, it has a ghost investigation log, which is pretty cool. It does teach kids how to document, how to record stuff. And at the end, it has a glossary of ghost hunting terms, which is pretty cool. So I can't really knock it. I think it's great to get children involved in the ghost field at some certain level. And I know that's a very touchy topic with a lot of people. It seems like people who have kids want to push their kids into it early, and people without kids or older kids get very upset about this. I don't know why. But as long as you educate children and you don't want to overblow the dangers. I think some people out there get a little bit too carried away with, oh my goodness, this is dangerous. It could do this. It could do that. Well, you know what? Crossing the street is dangerous as well. Going to school is dangerous. So it's in the educator. It's how you're teaching people how to do this stuff. It's how you're giving the subject matter across is that, that's what's important. And if you teach somebody right and you don't worry about the, I'm not saying don't worry about the fear, but don't instill the fear. If you talk about it and there's an understanding about all the stuff that goes into this, I mean, anything is dangerous. We can't pretend that ghost investigation is even any more dangerous than anything else out there. So just be responsible. And again, this is a great book for kids. And I've brought this along to a couple of conventions when I was talking about ghost stuff, and people love it. I've had quite a few people that say, I need to get this book. And I don't know if they did. I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. But again, Ghost Quest by Don Roth. Explore our haunted world. And it's got a little slide thing in the front. Handbook for Paranormal Investigators for Children. The book of the week this week. And one more story before I go. This is worth it, kids. Just hang in there. A 74-year-old woman in Cambodia lost her husband about a year ago. I know this, what a sad way to open a story. Like many people, she grieved, yet looked for signs that he might visit her at least one last time. Well, you might wonder why the story is in the other news section and not in the ghost section of the Paranormal News Insider. Well, Kim Hang, which is her name, came across a cow calf that began licking her arm and her hair, and what she describes as kissing her. I don't know. I don't want to think about it. There's no pictures. I don't know. I don't know. This is what the story said. I don't know any more than that, which convinced her that this calf was her reincarnated husband. Well, the 5-month-old calf is said to do all the things that her late husband does, and her children agree. So instead of grazing fields, the calf sleeps in a bed with a pillow and watches television all day. Well, Kim has purportedly married the calf, and the story has made the calf a media sensation, and many people come to see this animal daily. In many parts of the world, cows are seen as sacred, and eating of the meat or killing them may be illegal. So, you know, we can laugh all we want, but, you know, it's cows are looked at differently, especially in India, not to mention Cambodia, parts of Cambodia, depending upon their religious beliefs, a little bit differently than what we do here. I mean, can you imagine, you know, frankly talking about this story again? Just give me hamburger buns. That's all I need. I'll take care of the husband. Yeah, that's what he would say. And I agree. I mean, I get it, but there's a way to grieve. There's a way to get over things. And marrying a cow, that's not going to be very good in the future when the cow gets – it's going to get bigger. And I don't know, steaming piles. That's all I can think of at that point. And if you want to read that whole story, there you go. Have at it. Go for it. It's a pile of information. A nice patty of information there for you. And that's pretty much it. I can't go anymore. That's craziness. So as always, if you have any information about any paranormal conference or convention, I didn't talk about many on the show. I had a lot of news. If you have any event and it's not on my listing and you'd like to hear about it here on the show, let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com. Go to the paranewsinsider.com website. There's also a contact form there. Find me on Facebook, Twitter. I don't care. You'll find me. And might take me a little while to respond, but I will. I'll respond. And remember, you can listen in to the Paranormal News Insider and the rest of WCJV Digital Broadcasting Network on the WCJV app. Did I mention that? I think I did. It's available for Apple and Android devices, and you can download that at the appropriate, either the App Store or the Android, whatever store. You guys got a store. We got a store. Somebody's got a store. Somebody has a store. The Play Store. I guess you play there. So WCJV can now also be heard on iHeartRadio, which is huge, and iTunes, and is also available through SoundCloud, Mixcloud, YouTube, and a lot of other podcasting apps. Just search for it. If you can't find it, let those people know. Let us know. We'll do our best to get it on those networks. Big thanks to Cindy, my producer, for everything she does each week. For not just for me, but for the whole entire network. And to Dita, yes, you're still one of my top two favorite, you know, biggest fans, I guess. And everybody else that joined in the chat room, I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.